I want to first start by saying thank you, Mother Whitney. It's an immense honor to be able to stand up here today and speak to my beloved St. Stephen's community. As I look out into the crowd, I'm in awe. I see so many faces that represent God's faithfulness to me. And so this morning, I will try my best for my friends and family that are in the crowd. They're all crossing their fingers. Please, Denise, don't cry. Because once that happens, I have my little tissues here. But I want to share with you today a story of how the same God that parted the sea for the Israelites, the same God who has been faithful over the years, has been faithful to me. And so I want to show you through today's message the numerous times that God took the impossible and he made it possible. A little backstory on my spiritual journey. I was raised in a Christian home. I've loved God since the time I was five. Church for me has never been about following the rules, making sure I'm there every Sunday. Church for me has always been about a personal relationship with me and Jesus. From the time I was little, I heard his voice very clearly in my life, and that voice has been guiding me. I feel like it's maybe my little superpower, if there is spiritual superpowers. That voice I've been listening to, I've been tuned in like a radio all these years, and I believe that gift empowered me to walk the path that I have been on for the past 5 years. A little backstory as we go into this also. The Denise of 5 years ago was a little controlling. The Denise of 5 years ago liked to know everything. She was the family member that planned Christmas in July and let all the other family know that it was going to be at her house and this is what we were having. Everything in my life has been in order. That's really important. Hold on to that little bit of information about me. On October 17th, 2019, my life changed forever. I was faced with an impossible situation, a situation that was out of my control. After being married for 24 years, my husband said he no longer wanted to be married. It shook the very ground that I stood on. I felt at the time like someone had literally handed me a grenade, and the grenade went off in my hand before I could throw it away, and it literally broke me into 1,000 pieces. I share this with you this morning because this was the catalyst that has brought me to stand where I am standing right now before you. I laid in my floor in my bedroom one evening shortly after this, and I cried out to God, how am I going to do this? I can't do this. I can't live alone. I don't know what I'm going to do. How am I going to do this? Help me, help me, help me. And through those sobs, I heard his voice again, and he said to me very clearly, Denise, hold on to my hand and don't let go. Okay. The English teacher in me loves the theme, and I felt him saying, I'm going to take you higher. Hold on to my hand. I had never done finances alone, never took care of my car alone, never lived in a house alone, nothing. But through the beginning months of this journey, God started to surround me with an army. And some of that army is out here right now in the audience. An army of friends, of family, of my beloved son, who is the most amazing human being that I know. These people came alongside me, and they held up my arms on the darkest of days, on the days when I thought I wasn't going to be able to take a breath. He started to show me that he was going to take the impossible and he was going to turn it into the possible. He sent me Mother Whitney in the very early weeks of this news. And I sat in her office. I think I was in my pajamas and my winter coat because I used to call her back then and be like, I'm having a panic. I need to talk to you. And she'd say, come on over. I'd sit in her office, middle of the night, whatever. And she said to me one day, she said, Denise, look at me. She said, this is going to be a marathon, not a sprint. I said, okay. I really hate running to begin with. I don't think that this is going to be good for me. But I listened to her. He then sent me my little sister. She came from Cape Cod, and she sat with me for an hour, spent the whole weekend with me, and she showed me a finance app. And she said, this app is going to change your life if you follow it. She helped me begin to have agency in my life through that one little, seemingly insignificant little thing. He provided my dream job at the Brunswick School in Greenwich, Connecticut, a place where I would spend the next 7 years not only growing professionally, but personally. And he surrounded me with a community of colleagues there that walked with me through this journey. In 2019 to 2021, I spent hibernating in my house up the street. I dug into God's word, I went to a ton of therapy, and I listened to more podcasts on any person who could give me wisdom on how to successfully make it through a hardship, to make it through a heartache. I ate a lot of Good and Plenty candies. If you don't know what that is, go look it up later. You're either a Good and Plenty lover or hater. I also spent enough time at Ross Bread that I think I might have stock there and drank more than my fair share of London Fog teas. And then in the spring of 2022, the path started to peak in elevation. How fun. I was really just settling into kind of hibernating. And I heard his gentle voice again, and he said, Denise, I'm about to take you higher. Okay. It's time to sell your house. The house that was supposed to be our forever home. The house that literally had reached its zenith. It was perfect. The brand new kitchen, the furniture exactly how I liked it, the beautiful yard with the hydrangeas, the perfect location. But I knew from the past that he would take something that felt impossible and he would make it possible. Within a month, my house sold to a lovely couple in their probably late 20s, early 30s. I've gotten to know them. There's a new little baby that lives in that house. I couldn't be more happy. If I had to let go of it, I'd let go of it to the most wonderful people. But even in that, God was showing me, I'm with you, trust me, have faith. And then another impossibility came. My realtor whispers in my ear, Carla Murtaugh, and she says, Denise, just so you know, there's not many apartments in Ridgefield right now. This was 2022. The market was going crazy. She said, how about Wilton? I don't want to be in Wilton. I want to be in Ridgefield. Like, if I'm giving up this house, I want to be here in Ridgefield, trying to control. She said, okay, I'll do my best. I went into basement apartments that had zero light. I went into attic apartments that you had to shapeshift to make it to the top. I went into apartments with icky, dirty carpet. And then one day, I'm driving home from school, and I hear the whisper in my ear again, just gently. And he says, what about the apartment on Gilbert Street? Now, a month earlier, a friend of mine had said, hey, Denise, there's these gorgeous apartments on Gilbert across from Ballard. I was like, those aren't apartments. Those are too nice. Those are condos. She's like, no, I swear you should call. Well, I didn't. Driving home, hearing the gentle voice. I get home, I pick up the phone, I call the number. On the other end, the answering machine says, you have reached DLC Construction. Please leave a message. Oop, hung up. Oh gosh, I must have gotten this wrong. Picked up the phone again, dialed it again. You've reached DLC Construction. Then I knew. I was like, this is not, I don't know what this is, but this isn't an apartment. Then the phone rings 2 minutes later. The person on the other end says, hi, this is Danny. Did you just call my cell? And I said, yeah, I said, I got mistaken. I thought this was an apartment complex. He goes, it is an apartment complex. What can I do for you? And I said, well, I said, I know the market's going crazy, but I am looking for a place to live. Do you have any openings? And then the phone went silent. And he said, I cannot believe that you just called me. He goes, I literally just got off the phone with the lady who lives on the third floor, and there's an apartment available. Would you like to come see it? So the next day, it was a rainy, dreary spring day like we have here in Connecticut. I took my best friend with me, walked up the stairs to the third floor, and I opened the door, and I was overwhelmed. The feeling of joy was palpable in the room, and my best friend grabbed my arm, and she whispered in my ear, and she goes, oh my God, this is a Denise apartment. And I was like, okay, let's hold it together. Let's not make it like we're too excited about this, okay? It was beautiful, but the most beautiful thing about it, it was new and had beautiful trim and all the things, and God was showing me, I'm going to take care of you. Just keep holding my hand. Keep having faith. Something special about that little apartment that I didn't know until I moved in was there were only 8 other humans living in it, 7 of which were all women who had either been divorced or widowed. So here I was, surrounded again by God's faithfulness. And then another roadblock. Another impossibility. I had gone to a teacher's conference in LA, and I had met someone there that really inspired me. She kind of, I would say, was like a seed planter. She was a young girl. She was attending the conference. She was a PhD student. And this seed dropped into my heart that said, oh, this would be amazing if I'd love to get more education. I'd love to do this. But I loved my school so much, and so I was torn on when was the right time, what was I going to do. And then, fast forward to that summer. So that seed was planted. It was starting to grow, this idea of more education. And then my lovely neighbors invited me to a garden party. Her husband is an alumni of Oxford, and they were hosting an Oxford alumni garden party. So I got to spend the afternoon talking to the most interesting people about their journey at Oxford. As the talks went on and as I asked questions, there was someone that said to me, oh, I studied their 9-month master's program. And I was like, how fascinating. I didn't even know you could do that. And so I got in my car, and I was driving away, and there was the whisper again. If you could dream any dream, Denise, what would you dream? And I said, well, I'd love to go to Oxford. That would be really cool. Me, the girl with not a big pedigree on her resume, with colleges that aren't the top schools that Oxford would want. The girl who hadn't even studied English lit as undergrad started to prepare. I started to read Virginia Woolf and Bronte and all of the great literature greats and started to prepare my application to apply for Oxford. I was really excited. I had prepared my heart for the possibility of what would it look like if I lived abroad for a year? That would be cool. And then 2 days before my 50th birthday, I was about to have a really big celebration. I opened up my email, and there was the email from Oxford that said, I'm sorry to let you know that you haven't been accepted. And I crashed. I found myself on the floor sobbing like I did in my bedroom in my old house. And then I heard his voice say, Denise, we've been in the valley before. We know how to do this. Hold my hand and stand up. I said, okay. So I brushed it off, went to the party, said, I'm not going to think about this until I have to. The weekend went by, and I woke up on the actual day of my 50th birthday, March 4th. I was conflicted. See, that beautiful school that I had loved, that school that had become my community, they were holding my contract for me. They were supporting me in this Oxford journey. They were holding it to see if I had gotten accepted or not. I was crying my eyes out that morning at 4 a.m. God, what am I supposed to do? I feel that you're calling me to go abroad, but now I have nothing. What am I supposed to do? And then the impossible, he says, it's time to say goodbye to Brunswick. So I'm driving to school and I'm having my words with him. I'm like, listen, I'm gonna go in there. If I get any pushback from my principal, I'm not doing this. Well, sure enough, I sit in front of him. I say, hey, Rob, I didn't get in. And he looks at me and he goes, Denise, he goes, I feel a sense of change in you. I said, but I feel like I'm supposed to go overseas, Rob, but I don't know why. And he said, go for it. This is your time, go for it. He goes, Brunswick will always be here in some way. If there's ever an opening, we'd love to have you back. So I walked away feeling a little lighter. But there's something about transitions. Transitions are the time between the no longer and the not yet. And I don't know if any of you have been in transition time, but it really stinks. It's not fun to be in the what am I going to do now. So I started Googling memoir writing classes in England, and I found this great little quaint writer's guild that had memoir classes. I was like, great, I'll do that. Well, that started in January. I was like, well, what am I going to do from September to January? And then one night I was at my parents' house having dinner with our Korean family friends. And they were lamenting. They were about to move to Korea after living in the States for over 24 years. And they were lamenting, what are we going to do with our son? He's going into seventh grade, and he can't go into the Korean school yet. He could speak it, but he can't read or write Korean. And we have to do online school. And out of nowhere, without even thinking, whoop, out of my words, I was like, I'll go to Korea and teach Joshua. And she's like, really? And I was like, yeah, that would be really great. 3 months, no big deal. So that was wonderful. I did it. I said, yeah, this is going to be an adventure. See, Oxford was my dream. Korea was my stop-off place. It was just the place to fill the gap. Ha ha. Headed to Korea, had a wonderful time. And what I didn't expect when I got to Korea was that Korea was going to imprint on my heart, that I would fall in love with the people, that I would fall in love with the culture, that I fell in love with being the only white person in the room, no matter where I went. But I felt God there. I felt his presence. I felt him changing me and working on me, because he does that to us if we let him. When we kind of go away and we hibernate a little, if we let him, he will do a change in our lives. And right before I was headed home, I had all my plans. Remember that the Denise, the planner? I had all my plans. And mid-December, my colleague from Brunswick emails me, Denise, there's an English position open for September of 2025. They just came through the email. Email Rob right away. I was like, great. Emailed Rob. I was like, hey, Rob, I'm coming back. I'm going to do this writing course in Oxford, but I'll be back in the spring. I'd love to start back in September. I had it all planned out. He even said, this is great. He goes, we don't have to put you through the same interview process, no big deal. I was like, great. And then the day before I was flying home, an email from Rob hit my inbox. And he says, Denise, I am so sorry. We got a candidate, Harvard grad, Columbia undergrad, Columbia Teachers College, and she's been working at a prestigious all-girls school in New York City. We couldn't turn her down. I'm so sorry. Oh. Okay. So again, I spent the day lamenting, being in the valley. But I started to realize something had shifted in me. I started to realize that I didn't need to have a plan as much as I did before I left. The Denise that had been in Korea was starting to realize that not everything has an exact plan. Someday, you have to walk the path with just a flashlight, with not a big light ahead of you. That all God is requiring of us is to go one step at a time. So I did that. I got back on the plane. I came home. I met with my best friend's daughter, who was going to be accompanying me to England as a roommate and partner. And we're talking about the writing program. But we were talking about two different writing programs. She's like, Aunt Denise, she goes, the program that I'm talking about is actually at Oxford University. It's through their continuing ed. You actually can get certified. The one I was at was this little writer's guild. So there it was, even in that moment, I got to go to Oxford in January. I got to sit with Oxford professors and talk to people that were smarter than me, and they helped me grow as a writer, and it was amazing. And then I started to interview for jobs while I was over there, because that's the way the private schools work. You get your job placements late winter, early spring. I interviewed for 30 jobs. I made it to the second and third rounds of about three until they all said, would you be able to fly back for an in-person interview? And I'm thinking, I don't think I could fly back to do that. And I started to feel this unrest inside, like, what in the world is going on? All the doors were shutting. Brunswick opened up so quickly. The private school before that opened up so quickly. And then God was saying to me, you know how I work. When it's the right time, I open the door. When it's not the right time, I'm going to shut the door. So I started to rest in that. And then I found myself one Sunday in London, right in the heart of the city, in an Akurian church. And it was amazing. You had to wear the little earpiece. The whole service was in Korean. And as they stood up to worship, I started to sing along in Korean the best I could. And tears were streaming down my face. And I'm like, I had missed Korea so bad I didn't even know it until I was back in the community again. So another year came and went. It was March, and sweet Emma took me out for my birthday, and she said, Aunt Denise, what would you dream if you could dream? Any dream for next year without thinking about your family, without thinking about finances, what would you dream? And I said, I would love to go to Korea and learn how to speak the language. I want to learn how to communicate with these people that I love so much. And she goes, do it. It's nice when you have a 28-year-old friend that's just like, yay, go team, you know? And so I was like, oh, great, okay. So I got back to the States, and I was stuck because I was supposed to come back with a teaching job, with a salary, so that I could put down a deposit and have an apartment for my son and I to live in. And I had nowhere to live. My wonderful sister-in-law graciously was going to allow me to live in her office, in her house, with her two kids who were just about to come home from college, with all of their things. But at least I had a little space, but it was like, oh, I knew it was a big ask. And then, remember that house that I told you about, the beloved house that I had to say goodbye to? During the time of living there, I met two of the most wonderful human beings I've ever met in my entire life. Some of the most generous people I've ever met in my entire life. We had a friendship together. They took me in under their wing. And in April, they flew me to Charleston. And we were having dinner. And they were asking, what are you doing? You know, what's your plans? And I said, well, I don't have a place to live, so I'm still trying to figure it out. I might go live with Rebecca, blah, blah, blah. And they said, come live with us. And I said to them, well, that's really nice. I appreciate it. But you guys are just coming back from Charleston. You need your space. I said, well, at least let me pay rent for my room. Nope, no rent. Your family just come live with us. So every morning this summer, I've woken up and looked through my bedroom window at my beautiful house. And I sit there and I ponder and I reflect of God's goodness and his faithfulness to me. See, it doesn't always come with a shiny bow on it. Sometimes it's really painful, and sometimes it hurts. But I was taught just a week ago when I was going through another time of needing some more healing that I wasn't expecting. And a wise person said to me, there's two types of pain. There's a pain that hurts, and there's a healing pain. And she goes, Denise, this is a healing pain. You're going to have more healing. And so I released myself to that. So I have spent the summer being loved on by a wonderful family who has welcomed me in to their home, and I'm grateful for that. And on October 25th, everyone, I'm going to board Korean Airlines flight 82, and I'm going to head to Korea. And this time, I'm going to fine-tune my ear, because, see, I think I'm going there for language course. But I've learned all too well. I'm going there for more than a language course. I just don't know what, and it's okay that I don't know what. And I want to end today with the lyrics of a song that sums up who God is to me. And it starts off and it says, I call you faithful for the promises you've kept and every need you have met. Lord, I'm so grateful you were with me every step, and I will never forget. When I think of how your hand has never let me go, you have been so good to me. God, I can't believe how you have loved me. What a friend you have been. Amen.